Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Debron Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the first week of September. And we are very pleased to have for you today part two of a show that we recorded at the end of last month, when we had the opportunity to visit the wonderful Dungeness River Nature Center just outside of Sequim. We have with us our two special guests from part one of our show, Claire Manis-Hattler and her longtime friend and colleague Annette Hansen, both of whom were instrumental in starting the center years ago and are continuing with the center's great work today. Annette is currently serving as the president of the board of directors, and she and her husband, Mark Hansen, first started up the center back in 1984. Please listen to part one of our show for details on how the dream of creating a natural history center was first visualized and how it evolved. Right now, we'd like to start our show with a tour of the center with the current center director and manager, Powell Jones, who has been gracious enough to join us to talk about the current programs being offered here. Welcome, Powell. Thanks so much for joining us on KPTZ's Nature Now.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here today. I'm excited to talk to you and tell you a little bit about what we do here at the center.
We are thrilled to be here. It's an amazing place. It's been a number of years since I've been here, so I'm just stunned. It's just so transformed.
That's the reaction that we're looking for, is a stunned reaction when you come through, because really what we're aiming for here is to be a world-class nature center here on the Olympic Peninsula.
And it looks like you have achieved that.
Thank you. We're still working, but awesome.
Yeah, yeah. A work in progress. How long have you been center director?
I'm going to take a step back and say how long I've worked here. So
Yeah.
I've worked here for about 21 years, all except for 1 year that the center's been open. I worked for about 9 years as the education coordinator and did a lot of the education part of it. And then I moved into being the director about 11 or 12 years ago.
Wow.
Lost track a little bit of time there, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's great to have worked here first. I mean, to have come up through the ranks and seen all the different steps involved.
I also had a spectacular mentor when I started. So the first director was Bob Bokelhide.
I know Bob. He is a wonderful
He's amazing.
Person. Yeah.
So I had Bob as a mentor to kind of lead me through the natural history stuff, especially of running a center like this and being involved with the public and teaching them to open their eyes to the natural world.
So let's go on a little wander.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's take you out here. One thing that we wanted in this building was for it to fit into the natural and cultural landscape that we're in. So one thing that we recognized right away was that the bridge was a major part of this park and that the building should be somewhat mirroring the bridge. So the first part about this building is it lines up perfectly with the old railroad right-of-way and kind of makes it feel like it's part of the bridge, which was kind of an exciting thing when we built it. People would come by when we were first putting up the mill and say, "Are you extending the bridge?" And we'd say, "No, we're not extending the bridge," but that's exactly the feeling that we're looking for. So when you walk into the center, you'll feel two different types of cultural components. One, of course, is the Jamestown Tsklawan tribe. So when you're coming up to the building,
which is one of the active partners
correct.
To this.
Yeah. And so when you come up to the building, you'll feel a cultural component of Salish art and definitely that Jamestown branding of the building. And then the feeling of the cultural piece of the bridge also being a historic part and the building mirroring part of that cultural component.
Yeah, it's beautiful. All the light that comes in here and being able to look through to the bridge also is a wonderful sensation.
Spectacular. One kind of little thing that we did when we were building it, we realized that we're going to put in a bunch of glass. We are an Audubon affiliated center. Being Audubon, one of the biggest killers of birds is glass.
Yes.
And things hitting glass. So a lot of people come in, that's a lot of glass for a bird building. We were pretty fortunate to have the local Rotary Group contribute to this project through a bequest. And they paid for all the bird-friendly glass in this building. So the glass in this building, special glass to make sure that birds can see it. And we reduced the hits by about 90%.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Now, how is that? Is there mesh involved in the glass so that they can see it?
Yeah, kind of. It's a mesh of UV, basically a film between the glass plates that the birds see almost like a jail cell. It's kind of what they see. So like bars going across the window. So if you're in the center and you look up at kind of angles at the glass, you'll see almost pinstriping going through. It looks like a suit. The pinstripes are the bars. Yeah. Oh,
perfect.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So let me take you to some of the different rooms and we can check them out. I'll kind of tell you our thinking and thought behind all of the buildings that we did. One of the first places that I would say about our building and what makes it special is we raised a lot of the funds for this locally and through this taxpayers of Washington, of course, contributed to it. But much of the funds was raised locally. So something that was really important to our group was to keep the money local. So one of the first things I like to point out about this building is the framing, the concrete, the plumbing, the electrical, the siding, it's almost all local contractors who did this work. So it's people that live and work in this community. The money that we raised from our community went straight back into our community, which was a really important piece of this project to us. So one of the fun things is I'd be in here kind of working while the building's under construction, and I'd hear construction workers really excited about working on this building. It wasn't just a job.
Well,
they were talking about their memories of the river and about Railroad Bridge Park and about working here excited them, which was a really special part.
Yeah, that's great. And then they are able to bring their families here and say, we helped build this great structure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the second effect that we want, is people bringing people back saying, I was a part of this project. Whether it's a donor, a builder, a construction worker, whoever it is, a planner, an architect, when they say they can be part of this building and they're part of our community, that's a perfect win-win as far as we're concerned.
Yes.
Yeah? So
great.
That's a big part of it. Far as the heart of the building is actually the old part of the building, which is kind of funny, but the original part of the building remains. A lot of people walk into the new building and say, did you knock down the old building? No, we used the old building. And now it's what I would consider the heart of the building, which the heart of our building is the exhibits that talk about the Dungeness River and our watershed and what makes it special and how to relate that to other watersheds. So when you come in our building and you go into the exhibit room, it's a trip down the Dungeness. You start from the alpine environment, and then you walk down all the way to the estuary and learning about that watershed and that system. So that's what I would say would be the heart of our building.
Oh.
Is actually the old part, which in a way is such a cool relation that we got to take. A building that was used for all these different uses, for meetings, classes, potlucks, but mainly education, and then turn that building into education-only component is an amazing switch to make. So I get to walk into my old office, and now it's a wildlife viewing room.
Wow.
I wish it was that when I was there.
Yeah.
In that office, but it's still an incredible space.
Yeah.
So
great.
That's the heart of the building, if you want.
Let's go.
Point out some things in there and what we do. So this room was a little bit of a journey. So we've stepped inside the room. As you can see, it's kind of a giant diorama that instead of having an exhibit that you look and compare species next to each other, it's an exhibit where the species are in the environment that you would see them in our watershed. It's a little bit of a different jump from what we used to do, which is having cases. Here's bird A compared to bird B. Now it's more you step and you say, hey, I saw a bird in the montane forest. Okay, walk over to the montane forest. Is the bird there? Can you spot it? This is where it lives and this is where you should look for it. So it's a little bit different feel than our old one.
I came years ago to the old building and this is really incredible. I mean, just, it does give you way more of a sense of where the birds live and as you say, how the whole watershed fits together.
And hopefully in some respect, it gives people a sense of place of the Dungeness River for people that maybe have mobility issues or can't get up in the upper watershed, or you can't even go to the mouth. It's privately owned. But in this room, you can experience a little bit of the whole river in this room, from watching a video from the headwaters to the mouth, to experiences pieces of those in the building through the exhibits and through what's been written here. just want to give a quick shout out. In this room was a complete collaborative effort. This isn't just a staff project. This is our partners, which we have four partners, which I'll name right here, just a good time to do it. We have National Audubon. We're an affiliated center. We still get advertisement through them and some other resources. We have the local Audubon chapter who does education for us, helps us fundraise, does the Olympic Peninsula Bird Fest, if you've heard about that. They help organize and run that. We have the Jamestown Tsklallam Tribe. They're our local Native American partner who owns the land. This is their reservation land and trust land. They're our landlord, so we raised the money for the building. We did a leaseholder improvement, a very large one, and then we handed the building over to the Jamestown Tribe, and they lease it to us. The reason that we do that is to keep our expenses in check, so I don't have to put HVAC units in our budget. That's covered by the Jamestown Tribe. If something breaks in the building, they cover it. The lease agreement's a pretty good one, so we pay $1 per year for the next 75 years. So we're extremely lucky on that one. And then we're our own 501c3. So the other partners have all sorts of things that they work on and contribute to. And then we only do this place. This is our game right here, as far as our 501c3. Yeah. So the building in here, this room in here of exhibits, all the partners put into it, it's really based off of a framework called the ABCs. Not the ones that we learned in kindergarten. So it's the ABCs of ecology. So when you walk in the room, you learn about the abiotic factors, so things that were never living, the biotic factors, so things that are alive or once were alive, and the cultural factors. So we've mixed in how the Jamestown Tribe has interacted with their ancestral river for time immemorial in this room, and plan to extend that outside of this room as well.
It's a wonderful partnership. It's very unique in having partnership with the tribes as well as having all the different environmental groups, right?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, when I first started here, I was a National Audubon employee. This was a National Audubon Center. It was the first National Audubon Center with a Native American tribe partner. And oh my gosh, I've had so many different nature centers come to me and say, how can we work with a Native American tribe and make that partnership work? It's been beautiful to this point. I feel very fortunate to be surrounded not only in the people, but the organizations that help here. And to make something work like this and a partnership, I think it's a little unusual for four partners to work as well as we do together.
Yep.
And I feel very fortunate for that part. I know my board does too, or our board feels pretty fortunate.
We all reap the benefits of that. I mean, look at what's been created here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the heart of the building, this is it. A small but mighty room of exhibits. Yeah. So if you want to step out this way, I'm going to take you into our bigger room and kind of talk about what happens in there. Many of our programs are led, some are not. So the ones that aren't led would be the ones that take more place in the room that we were just in. You know, self-guided tour, I want to learn about the Dungeness, I want to learn about our watershed. You'd go in there by yourself. This room that we're stepping into now is the room that we mainly do presentations in. We rent it to the community and all sorts of things like that. So there's quite a bit of space here. So we have about room for 150 people seated in theater style, and about 100 people if they're to rent it and have tables for a dinner out, which we've done. When we were building this building, one of the big things that came up far as a question is just sustainability. Like, how do we make an operation like this run and work with just an exhibit room or something like that, which is pretty difficult to say the least. So we wanted to make it as multi-purpose and serving our community in as many ways as possible. And part of that was creating a room like this that fits 100 people at a dinner, has a commercial kitchen connected to it, so a commercial catering kitchen, and to allow us to rent it. So when we're not doing a program in here, we might be renting it to a wedding, to a medical association, to a group, to artisans, whatever it is. They're renting this room, which then goes back to supporting our educational outreach and programs.
But then they're not only renting the room. I mean, they themselves are becoming educated when they come here for an event that is not related. They go, wow, look at all this other cool stuff. So that's a win-win.
I definitely have had that reaction, yeah. That when they come in, it's not just walking into a blank, you know, meeting space. There's this whole feel and energy around this place with the education that's happening. And it's happening everywhere. Like, I like to think that any room in this building can be used for education. We used to laugh in the old building that was the case. You'd open our closet doors and there'd be a poster in there of, like, you know, here's the mushrooms of the Pacific Northwest. All you had to do is open this closet to learn it. And now a lot of those things are more out in the open and in front of people. So people are getting educated, whether it's on their way to the restroom or in our office or in my office. There's something there that is meant to inspire and educate people about the outdoors.
I was really interested in reading about your Sunset Speaker Series, but that happens outside, right? Does it happen in this room, or does it usually happen outdoors?
So really funny you ask. Usually it happens outdoors this last weekend, and this is the benefit of having a room like this. We used to do a similar series outdoors, and then some kind of event, like maybe heavy rain comes, and it's like, how do you do a speaker series with PowerPoint and all that? Now when something happens outside, we move it inside. This last weekend being a perfect example, we had a talk. It was about forest bathing, which is kind of being aware while you're walking through the forest. And we had a really bad AQI. The air was horrible, hence my little scratchy voice.
The smoke was
very bad. So our education manager moved it inside. That's something that we now have the freedom to do, which brings a little bit more flexibility of us not having to cancel something, but just adjust on the fly to be able to still do a program like that here. So Sunset Speaker Series, yes, we definitely are doing that right now. That's a little new this year. It's kind of based off of an old series, but it's new this year, all new speakers, outdoors, typically by our Cedar Hat classroom. I'll describe that really quick, even though we're not going out there. We have a classroom that was part of a restoration project, was built as an extension of that restoration project. Because we moved some of our facilities out of the floodplain, we needed to replace the uses of those facilities. So we have this amazing classroom that looks like a cedar hat. So it has about a 30-foot roof going up into the sky that looks like a traditional potlatch hat. Mm-hmm. And then inside of it, you go in, there's three garage doors that totally open. So students can feel like they're outside, but they're protected from the elements. And I can, you know, go full steam ahead in the middle of December, sticking kids in the river, and then pulling them out of the river and getting them in a warm building to still do the education part throughout the whole year, which was a pretty major change for this park and a pretty incredible one for our education programs. So
you have a bunch of summer camps, right? Today was the last day, right? There was a one on critter robotics,
mm-hmm.
But the summer camps went on all summer long. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a few summer camps. So we have a couple bike camps outside of this place. I'm a pretty passionate mountain biker. And so I've worked my passion into my job, which I would encourage to anyone to work their passions into their job. But on that one, we do a couple bike camps where I take people, kids, biking. I teach them how to repair and fix and do things. And along the way, do interpretation of the natural world. So in one of them, we do the whole ODT over 3 days from the Jefferson County, Clallam County line all the way to the Elwha with little kids,
wow.
Which is incredible, yeah. To do that. Kids having that span of a community asset that happens to go through our park and an amazing asset in the Olympic Discovery Trail. And then to experience that whole thing and kind of have that feeling of how the landscape rolls and feeling on a bike's just a bit different. We do another bike one where I take them mountain biking. That was last week. We had a couple robotics camps, which are the ones that you were referring to, which I don't teach. Actually, somebody that's very passionate about it teaches it. And she helps them build animals and stuff that have a robotic type of facility to them. They move around or do something and make a sound. And then this year we had a girls in science camp. So we have an all girls camp, which I'm not allowed in. I have three older sisters, but I am still not a female. So our education manager teaches that. She brought in female scientists. They do river monitoring. They do real world science in a pretty safe and inclusive environment for girls, which we've found that little boys are great, and we're probably going to do a all-boy camp next year. But separating them a little bit really brings the voice out in little girls to really take on the world, and they just feel so much more confident in that camp to ask questions and do a spectacular camp that is sponsored by an individual donor every year to do that camp.
Wow.
So,
great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there is a ton of stuff that I want to ask you about. You've got like film series coming up. You've got one on taxidermy.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so it actually, our film series started from the taxidermy movie, which is called Stuffed.
Appropriately enough.
Yeah, probably enough for sure, which showed in Port Townsend for a while. Many people probably saw it at the Rose Theater. It's an incredible movie, kind of documentary that talks about the art of taxidermy. So really taking the yuck out of taxidermy and showing what artists these people are. I think that there's a misconception of what taxidermy is for a lot of people. And watching this particular film and then having a live panel after. So we'll have a live panel of people. Annette Hansen will be one of them.
She's going to be one of them.
Correct.
Yes.
One of our current, we have two current taxidermists. One of our current taxidermists will be another one. And then the aforementioned Bob Bokelhide will probably be the third. So we'll talk taxidermy in this building and kind of how it happens and kind of some fun stories after the movie. Movie's super fun anyways, but then adding kind of some of those personal stories so people connect with this place in a more personal way, which is always our goal, is to help people connect with this river in a personal way. So film series is a nice additive way to do that, especially when the weather gets a bit more yucky in the winter, to be able to bring people in, have them connect over a film that talks about the outdoor world is right up our alley. Yeah.
Speaking of connecting with this place, you had a program about fish, right? You
Yes.
had people releasing little coho fry.
Yeah, so we every year partner with Washington Department of Fish and Game. We do a program that's called Salmon in the Classroom. We get some help from other groups like Puget Sound Anglers helps us, and both hatcheries help us. We get eggs. We put the eggs into the tank. We raise them from egg to fry, or like little tiny fish. And then basically we have people release them. In the past, I've always had kids release them. This year, because of how things lined up, we weren't going to be able to do the field trip, so we experimented with allowing anyone to release them,
and
which
you
was
found that the people were clamoring.
Oh my
people
gosh!
Were knocking each other over for their little fry.
They were not quite a blood sport, but close. But when we take people out, we teach them a lesson about salmon, basic life history, how many different types of salmon they are, and then we have two things that people do. I had kids do this, and then we had adults do it this year, which was really fun, is we have them name the salmon. They can name them anything except for shark bait and sushi and dory. So they can name them anything, and then I have them give them a motivational speech on the way down to the river about the things they're going to face and how they're going to make it back.
We are like almost out of time. How is that possible? We should like be doing the whole rest of the year on the Dungeness River Center.
You can come back anytime you'd like, and I would love it if you guys came back and even did a program of one of our field trips with kids.
Oh, we would love that.
Yeah.
But before we go, we want to hear about the festival that's coming up.
Great.
Please.
River Festival hasn't happened in a couple of years because of obvious pandemics and construction, both kind of interfered with it. We've been doing it for quite a few years. This will be the 17th one we've done. Used to be every other year. We made it every year. At the festival, we invite third through fifth graders, but any community members welcome. When they get here, what they will be greeted with is all different types of agencies and groups that work on this river. So it might be the Forest Service talking about what they do, or the Park Service. Each booth has a kids' activity. It's very kid and community focused. It's free, We want people to connect to this river, so we're not charging for something like that. But coming down for that day from 9:30 to 2:30 and learning about our river is awesome. It's also things that can be applied to other rivers and making those connections and building stories.
And that is going to be on Friday, the 22nd
of
September?
You are correct. Yep, great. You nailed it. Yep, Friday, September 22nd.
Great. Well, we will hope to be there. Thank you so much for coming to join us. We so enjoyed speaking with you, and we are definitely going to be back. And we'd like to thank Annette Hansen and Claire Manis-Hattler for being our guides also, and the staff of the Dungeness River Center. To Meg Amos for being our field recorder, Nora Petrich for being our sound editor, and to all of you for listening. Please go to the great website for the River Center at dungenessrivercenter.org to remind you of all the amazing things on offer here throughout the year, and plan to attend the fun-filled Dungeness River Festival. And remember, it's happening all day at the Nature Center on Friday, the 22nd of September, which is coming right up. And you can hear part one of this program as a podcast on KPTZ, or look for Nature Now on your favorite podcast app. Closing music this week is Big River with Johnny Cash and the Highwaymen, as a special treat for Meg, whose family grew up loving Johnny Cash. As always, wishing you happy trails.
Clouds had a cover of a clear blue sky, and the tears I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, Big River, and I'm gonna sit right here until I die.
I met her accidentally in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it tore me up every time I heard her drawl, southern drawl, and I heard my dream went back downstream for Fortin and Davenport, and I followed you, Big River, when she called. Oh, she took me to St. Louis later on down the river. The freighter said she's been here, but she's gone, boy, she's gone. And I found raised a few eyebrows and went on down alone. Well, I pulled into Natchez next day down the river, but there wasn't much there to make around to stay very long. When I left, it was raining, so nobody saw me cry. Big River, why she doing me this way? Down the Baton Rouge River Queen, roll it on. Take that woman on down to New Orleans, New Orleans. Go on, I've had enough, dump my blues down in the Gulf. She loves you, Big River, more than me.
I taught the weeping willow how to cry, cry, cry,
and I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear I cried for that woman, are gonna flood you, Big River, and I'm gonna sit right here until I die.